are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the show. I'm Mark in San Diego, Beth in Texas. We decided to come back. We've been off for the last couple of weeks, both been extremely busy, but we figured, at least on my end, I'd put my big boy pants back on and get back on the podcast air, if you will. Beth, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to be back.
I can hear it in your voice. You have a spring in your step. Is it maybe the time change? Do you like that? Oh, you go to bed early, so you don't like the time change, right?
I don't. In fact, no, I don't like this time change because I like to wake up early and go to bed early. So going to sleep when it's still light outside is kind of difficult for me. But you know what? It is what it is. Spring is here, and it's pretty toasty in Texas.
Yeah. No, we're going to have to push your bedtime back a little bit. Maybe you can actually go to bed when it's dark out. Okay?
Yeah, I know. It's tough.
You're old enough now to go to bed at 8:30 or 9.
You're okay.
Hey, so we're going to talk about a lot of different things today. We're going to talk about this being Nutrition Month. We're going to talk about what's going on with the new Going Gym Free site. So if people are just joining us, again, been off a couple weeks, no big deal, but wanted to get back at it and talk about nutrition and different things today. So really good stuff. So if you're just joining us, uptomeradio.com, follow Up to Me Radio on Twitter and Facebook. You can always send us an email to goinggymfree@gmail.com. So try to find us on all the social media outlets. Our executive producer, Mel D, has done a great job in promoting it, and it's off and running, and the station has been wildly successful. So really still happy to be a part of it and producing shows with great guests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, Beth, this is what I want to talk to you about before we get into nutrition and all that. I wanted to tell people about just kind of promote it that we're working on a new goinggymfree.com site. It'll be up probably in a couple of weeks. I think people are going to love it. They're going to love having you on there, Beth, because not only are you at some point going to provide some tips and all your expertise, but you are our wellness specialist. So congratulations. Just one more thing to throw on your plate, right? Because you're not busy enough.
I love it, though. I love wellness. So perfect.
Yeah, and it's going to be good because there's going to be a lot of different things when it comes to content and blogs and getting interactive with people trying it. And there's going to be a link on there to all of our podcasts, so people can listen to Beth anytime they want. They scroll right past me. They just wait. They wait for you to come in and talk about the. All the things you're an expert in. So it's going to be cool. It's going to be great. I wanted to give it just an update off the top of the show to let people know because we're working hard on it and we're looking to make a difference in the world one person at a time. So Beth, thank you for your support.
Right.
Your picture looks great on the website. Thank you for that.
Oh, no problem.
And one other thing about that. Murray is also going to be prominent on this as well. So if you like dogs, because I've always thought dogs are a huge part of us being successful with our wellness programs. Murray is on there. So Murray is a big part of sleeping and walking and drinking water.
And going gym free.
And going gym free. Because God knows he's not going to a gym.
I love the picture you sent me a couple weeks ago of Murray actually sitting on a kitchen table or dining room table.
Yep.
He was like sitting at a chair. It looked like he was eating. It was such a cute picture. So I hope that picture is on the website.
Yeah. We're going to put something like that up there. Just to let people know, I was over at my mom's house. So he was at his grandmother's house. And when I go over there occasionally for dinner, we'll sit at the table because I'm still not old enough to eat in front of the TV at my mom's house, being in my mid-40s.
Oh,
apparently, I still have to sit at the table. So, but when I sit down there, Murray just goes right off the couch and wants to sit. He's got a chair. So he's got a chair at the table. And every dog we've had growing up, my last dog, Maggie, they've all had a chair at the table. I know I'm weird. Okay.
No, you're not. You just love dogs. And that's a good attribute.
I do. So what are we going to talk about today? You want to roll on through with nutrition, right? That's what
absolutely.
Things you want to talk. You want to talk about today?
It's a hot topic.
It is a hot topic. Do you find? Let me ask you this before we get started, because we're gonna mix it up today. We're gonna talk about three unhealthy foods. We're gonna take some questions. We're gonna talk about my three foods that I think are healthy choices. So let me ask you a question, Beth, and this is simple, but we can't state it enough. When you deal with clients, because I deal with this too, how much of their initial problems when they get started is, do you think, food-based?
I mean,
80%. Right off the top, right?
Yep, 80% is it. I mean, when you even know I have my degree in exercise science, kinesiology, I completely am convinced that let food be your medicine. I mean, there's that old saying that says that. It's so important, let food be your medicine. So, I mean, we live, to be realistic, you're not going to eat healthy 100% of the time. So when you break it down, let food be 80% healthy, 20% unhealthy. So, and that just gives people that leeway to have those treats every once in a while. But food is key in general health and wellness. And then exercise is a huge component too. So the four pillars of wellness are food, fitness, stress, and sleep. So,
yeah, and I think you're right. Every time I talk to somebody that has kind of gotten off track, you can almost go to the diet right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because when you eat better, or you know, a lot of people use the term eating clean. When you eat better or clean, you feel better. Like you just physically feel
Absolutely.
Better. Everything. You're more alert. It's amazing just how much better you feel. So nutrition's a huge part of it. So let's do this. So do you want to have some fun? Do you want to kind of ping pong back and forth? You want to do an unhealthy food and then I'll do a healthy food? We'll just kind of go back and forth. So you know what? I'm going to make an executive decision. That's what we're going to do. So I'll start off with one healthy food, because you did a couple weeks ago. You threw three out there that were great.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll lead this off. Salmon. Right?
Salmon.
You on board
yummy.
With, you, mm-hmm. you on board with it? Omega-3s,
yep.
Two servings a week, high protein, farm-raised. Stay on it. Good. I love salmon. I think that is – let me tell you, if you made me salmon with maybe a small serving of brown rice and mixed veggies, that's probably a meal I could eat a lot. So
yes.
I like that's mm-hmm. that's a nice like a simple kind of healthy meal. So salmon, I'm throwing it out there. My first one, salmon. Give me
okay.
an unhealthy.
And that's
food.
A good one. That's a good one. And I think that to piggyback on the salmon thing is Mark's right. You want to make sure that it's not farm raised, that it's fresh caught.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh right, no, that's what I meant. That, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. I just wanted to clear that. But salmon is a really good one. Okay, first unhealthy food that people think is healthy is frozen yogurt. And when people think of yogurt, most of us actually think of those live active cultures that are really helpful to the body. At least that's what I immediately think of. But when it comes to frozen yogurt, most times there's no live or active cultures. And that's because the processing of the heating the yogurt first kills off all those healthy live cultures that are beneficial to our health. So And another problem with frozen yogurt is people think they can overindulge because this treat is quote-unquote healthy, and this can lead to overeating and just, you know, an excessive consumption of calories. So frozen yogurt, not a good treat to have. If you want something sweet, you know, really try to limit the amount of frozen yogurt you consume. If you are going to have it, use healthy toppings such as fruit and really – and honestly, I'm going to recommend people buying something called Beyond or Organic Amasai, which is kind of like a kefir, but Amasai is really, really healthy. It's tasty, a little bit different taste than yogurt per se, a lot like kefir, but it's such a healthier replacement for frozen yogurt. So frozen yogurt, yeah. Unhealthy that people think
not good.
Is healthy.
I know. Well, I think kind of leaning on what you're saying too. I think a lot of people think, well, I'm not eating ice cream. It's frozen yogurt. It says there's no calories.
Exactly.
It's very similar to the whole diet soda thing. When people go, well, I don't drink regular soda. I drink diet soda. Yeah, I know, but there's chemicals in there that lead to the brain and that make you feel hungrier and you end up eating more and it's blah. Yeah, it's not good. So, okay, my turn.
Yes.
Healthy food. Apples.
Apple.
You say you're a 2-apple-a-day person. I say at least 1. Apple a day keeps the doctor away. Vitamins, high water content, fiber. And the green apples have less sugar. So
that's true.
I would say that apples – I've always liked apples anyway.
I do too.
And I like them – I like them sliced up and put in a salad too. So it can be put in a regular old salad. And I've always been an apple guy. And if you actually sat and ate 2 apples, you'd be pretty full too. So.
Oh my goodness! I'm kind of an apple snob. The only kind of apple
you?
I love them. I love them. But Honeycrisp, Jazz apples, and Granny Smith. Those are the only 3 that I really like. But I love them. The rest of them, you know, like the mushy ones that are kind of sandy, I don't like those.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. So those are my 3 apples.
Apples are
healthy.
I like a good green apple too. Yeah. No, for sure. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean you should go buy a box of Apple Jacks. We're not talking about that.
Exactly.
I mean, a wonderful cereal as a child. I have great memories in college of eating Apple Jacks, but no, it's not an apple.
Yeah.
Okay. Food number 2 for you that's unhealthy that we need to talk about. Go.
Another food that people think are healthy but aren't, or they need to kind of watch what they put into it, is a smoothie. I remember when smoothies first became popular years ago, everyone thought they were like the best kept health secret out there. And many of the smoothies and juices out there, I mean, they really are healthy, but some of these supposedly healthy smoothies are really loaded with a whole lot of junk that our bodies don't need, like sugar and cream and whole milk. So, I mean, some smoothies do contain healthy fruits and vegetables, but that sugar content, you really have to be aware, because that can, those levels of sugar can really spike your blood sugar in your body, and it can spike and fall, which is related to acquiring type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance. So, and both of these conditions can lead to a more serious health problem. So I really say if you're going to have a smoothie, it's best to consume smoothies that don't have fillers such as ice cream or whole milk and those type of fatty things, but instead opt for smoothies that are made entirely of fruits, veggies, and all natural ingredients, maybe like flax seeds, coconut, sunflower seeds, and that would be a healthier option.
Hmm. But people are not going to like you today, Beth. I mean, you're the killjoy. No frozen yogurt.
I am.
No fun smoothies. And here I am telling people to eat salmon and apples. So I'm coming off as a good guy today. Okay, those are great though. So I'm going to go back to my 3rd one now, and this is one that you like more than I do. But sauerkraut. Okay. I'm not a huge fan myself, but
I love it.
Probiotics. You know, controlling gut bacteria, good for you.
Now, do you like cabbage?
I could eat it, but I'm not a huge, and you know what? Most of the, That's funny you mentioned that. Most of these kind of healthy choices that we talk about, I really do like them. It's not that I'm forcing myself to eat them. I really do like salmon, and I really do like apples. So I like a lot of this food that we talk about. So I guess I'm lucky that way. And here's the other funny thing. What you were talking about before we get to your third one, frozen yogurt and smoothies, I'm not that big of a fan of those anyway. I couldn't even tell you the last time I had frozen yogurt, and probably the last time I've made my own smoothies. That's another good tip for smoothies is if you're doing it yourself, you know what you're putting in there. So if you're going to some smoothie bar in the middle of the mall, that's going to be unhealthy because you don't know what they're putting in there. So I haven't had a smoothie in a while, but I like it. But I like making it myself because I can go, look, I'm putting in the blueberries, I'm putting in the bananas, I know I'm not adding sugar. So that's my tip about smoothies. I can't wait to hear your third one. So let's unveil that. What's your third one?
Yeah, the last thing I want to say about sauerkraut is anything about that's fermented, any type of food is really good. Like you had said, the gut lining, which helps with not having leaky gut, anything that's fermented like sauerkraut. And I just know this because I love sauerkraut. So anything fermented is really healthy, a good option. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay, my third and my last unhealthy food that people think, and I think we're getting better about this, but hopefully most of our listeners understand the hype around the no-fat or low-fat eating. I mean, come on, back in the 90s, that was the craze, and it's not really healthy. I mean, there are so many good fats out there, as well as bad fats, so cutting out all fats is really not a healthy choice. I mean, you had just mentioned salmon, the omega-3s, we need the omega-9s in our body, so omega-6s you really want to stay away from. But, you know, it's really important to eat your share of healthy fats while avoiding those unhealthy fats that I was just talking about. So many of these low-fat, no-fat, you know, foods and diets are really loaded with artificial flavors and lots of sugar to give it flavor. So again, I just said you want to avoid eating too much sugar. That can lead to type 2 diabetes and other, you know, chronic conditions. So those are my three unhealthy choices.
Wow. Okay.
Frozen yogurt, smoothies, and no-fat foods.
Yeah. No, I think those are good. And so we got people. This is great, too, for Nutrition Month to talk about these things. And I would encourage people, if people are listening, take a picture of maybe a creative meal you've made with salmon or sauerkraut or apples or something healthy and send us in a picture. Email it to goingjimfree@gmail.com, and we would be happy to we'd be happy to post. I love seeing that. I'm not one of these guys, although I just – before we came on the air, I sent you a picture of ahi I made. I'm not really big into
it. It looks yummy.
Yeah, it was good. Oh, so good. Olive oil, too, is one of my favorite things. So I pan-seared it in olive oil. But I'm not a big picture. I'm not a big fan of the food pictures that you see all over social media. But I want people to send them in because I think it's neat when people are eating healthy and clean and all that stuff. Okay, let's move on. This was a good segment. We do have an Ask Beth segment. So I'm going to fire away a couple of questions at you, and we can talk more about that. Okay, first question came in. One of my favorite issues to discuss, Beth.
Okay.
I keep getting athlete's foot, and I've had this issue for over 6 years, and I can't seem to get rid of it. What do you advise?
I think the
an extra pair of socks.
a little bit more than that.
I'm just kidding. I'm just playing. Just kidding with the audience. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, athlete's suit can actually be really, really I actually had athlete's suit when I was in college, when I was competing in gymnastics. But I think you need to go to the doctor to make sure it is athlete's foot, because athlete's foot can actually mimic, like, really bad eczema or dermatitis. And it can be hard yourself to kind of differentiate between the two of them. So if you have kind of that thick, scaly, cracking skin, it's itchy, maybe some, like, between the toes where fungus is more likely to grow, blistered, discolored toenails, those can actually, you know, that can be athlete's foot. So go to your doctor to make sure. So how you get athlete's foot. I mean, one thing that's really common is a gym. It's a gym. I mean, you're coming in contact with people, hundreds or thousands of people, on things like the shower floor or a swimming pool. It's like damp. So think about that. So and it's really important for people to know that exposure to the fungus responsible for athlete's foot really promotes the spread of infection in your own life. So you really need to get a handle of that. So I'm going to say the best, like Mark said, you know, have good, clean socks to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
Wear foot coverings in wet public places when possible. I mean, you see people have shower shoes at gyms and locker rooms. So wearing that, and that's a really good remedy in avoiding the problem in the first place. You know, keep your feet dry when getting out of water, whether you're at home or in public places. So try to go barefoot a lot. You know,
mm-hmm.
So if you're at home, barefoot, walk barefoot in the grass, which I think is wonderful. Wash towels if you suspect there's an infection or if they've been used in a public place, because a lot of locker rooms and gyms do have community towels that are clean, but, you know, just make sure that, or bring your own towel. And then, honestly, let's talk about diet. I mean, eating a diet, a healthy diet, you know, having probiotics like that sauerkraut Mark was talking about, and avoiding good bacteria killers like antibacterial soap. You know, that is, I know that was kind of a huge craze, but, you know, stay away from that. And then things like oregano oil is really good. So put some coconut oil on your feet with maybe some oregano oil or rosemary oil. Those would be good kind of, I love coconut oil. I love coconut
mm-hmm.
oil, and I think that could help your athlete's foot too. So those are kind of my tips.
Yeah, I had, like you said, you had it in college. I had it in college. It's uncomfortable. So
mm-hmm.
It's not, yeah, go get it checked out, take care of it, because it's, you know, I had it between the toes, and it's just not, just irritating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it burns, if I remember. I mean,
it
that
burned,
was a long time ago, but I remember it took me about a season of gymnastics to actually get rid of it. So got
yeah,
rid of it in the spring, and I was vowed that would never happen again.
And when you vow, it probably never happened again.
Yeah.
So,
I actually started using coconut oil on it. Mm-hmm.
All right. That's
so
that's
what
good.
My coach told me. So, yeah.
Okay, this second question.
And I carry coconut oil with me everywhere. I have my little coconut oil.
In your purse? You carry it in your purse?
With my laptop. Mm-hmm. It's with me everywhere.
Very nice. Oh, I like that.
That's how much I love it. Like, I actually gargle with coconut oil. It's called oil pooling. I do that, and it's just, I love coconut oil. So that's my remedy for everything. Coconut oil.
We learn something new about you every day. Okay.
Sad.
here's another one. I'll weigh in on this one too, because it's an important one. How many hours of sleep do you actually need per night? Boy, is that a question I get all the time, but I'll let you answer and then I'll put in my two cents. Go for it.
You know, Mark, sleep is such a hot topic. I mean, we can say
it
hot
really
topic,
is.
But sleep really, really is. And we've actually received kind of similar questions in the past about sleep. So, you know, and I have to say, I always say this is almost like my mantra in life is sleep, a full night's sleep is not a luxury. It's a basic necessity for,
totally.
You know, not only health, but healthy hormone balance. Because once you dip below 7 hours a night, you're
mm-hmm.
increasing your risk of diabetes, heart disease,
yep.
stroke, depression, and even obesity, which is kind of, you know, people question that, but it's
yep.
true. I actually took a sleep study class a couple years ago, and I learned in that class that slow wave sleep, which is the deep dreamless sleep that we sink into at about 3 or 4 times a night, can actually regulate your metabolism. So
yep.
that stage 4 slow wave sleep, which begins about an hour after we fall asleep, is when we release our growth hormones. And that hormone prompts the body to burn stored fat. And when we're young, we spend about 20% of our time in that slow wave sleep. But as we get older, we only spend about maybe 10 or even 5% there. So that's one of the reasons that as we get older, we put on weight a little bit easier, or maybe we, you
yep.
know, get sick easier. But sadly,
yep.
just 2 nights of bad sleep will cut that hormone called leptin by 20% and increase your hunger hormone, ghrelin, by 30%. So that's going to make you, you know, more likely to snack on high carb treats, you know, that
yep.
you need that sugar, you need that treat, which couldn't come at a worse time for your insulin levels. So, you know, I'm going to answer that question, you need to get at least 7 hours of sleep a night. But I tell people that 7 to 9 hours is ideal, and some people yep. might even need 10 hours of sleep a night, like me. So, yeah, sleep is important.
Well, I let me, because you hit all of the points I was going to talk about. I would say at the very least, because you mentioned that you're at higher risk for cardiovascular, obesity, diabetes. Okay, that should be enough, right? But mm-hmm. I also look at a lack of sleep as affecting mood, memory, and you mentioned this one too, metabolism. And I can speak firsthand on this. Years ago, I was a perfect case study for this. Years ago, I did the morning TV for the local news out here in San Diego. I had to be up at 3:15. I had to be at work at 4, and I could never get my body right, and I was sleeping 5 to 6 hours a night, and it wasn't good sleep either. I mean, it was tough. And not only did I gain weight from it, not only did it throw off my metabolism, but like Beth said, I was eating not I wasn't cognizant enough because of the lack of sleep to make good diet choices. So I was tired and hungry, and I wasn't eating right. And I would say in probably 6 or 7 months, I put on 15 pounds. And it wasn't that I was eating crazy. I just, everything, all my levels were thrown off. It just completely thrown off
right.
from a lack of, from it was in, like you said, it's not just one, because we all have a night where we don't sleep well. It just happens. But it was a cumulative effect. So once it goes from one night to two nights to a week or whatever, it is hard to get on track, and it throws off everything. So the sleeping, in my opinion, is the ultimate kind of reset button, and it shouldn't be taken lightly at all. So if you have trouble sleeping, see your doctor, see if there's something going on. But I tell people, look, if you have to, turn your place like into a sanctuary that it feels like you need to go to sleep. Turn your phone off. Turn your TV off, put a mask over your eyes, whatever you need to do to get to sleep, because I think it's one of the biggest things that we have to deal with. And how many, and you know, you probably deal with people all the time. Beth, I've been getting by on 4 to 5 hours of sleep for years. No, that's not a good idea. It's
not,
like,
not at all.
You know, I'll deal with it with a lot of men that almost feel like it's a badge of honor. And they're like, yeah, no, Mark, I've forever. I can't tell you the last time I slept more than 6 hours. Okay, that's not good for you. Here's
yeah.
why. So that was good. No, I'd say 7 to 9. So that's kind of my rant about sleep. I'm kind of it's kind of a big deal for me. Okay, last one, and then we'll go to break. It's about stretching, I think. How long and how often should I stretch for flexibility? Another great question. Go for it.
You know, stretching is kind of a sneaky fella, because I think that stretching is the most underrated form of exercise out there. And I think people, you know, it's the most underrated form of exercise out there. But the key is to stretch after your workout. You shouldn't stretch before working out. Instead, you should warm up with maybe a light cardio, 5 to 10 minutes, maybe do a few light stretches, train, and then stretch. But get this, stretching before workouts has been shown to decrease the intensity of your muscle contractions, which can actually impede your progress in the gym or after a workout or whatever you're doing. And I find that stretching after workout it really makes me just feel better. It's most effective mm-hmm. Because it really releases the tension in the muscles from the workout. So it can improve circulation, that flexibility that you were just asking. It can promote healing and optimal recovery from your workout. So, I mean, you just have to make sure that you're stretching right, you know, like mm-hmm. making sure you're hydrated, make sure you're breathing, not holding your breath when you stretch. A lot of people do that. Hold evenly, mm-hmm. you know, maintain good posture. Don't bounce. I've seen so many people, and God love her, Jane Fonda, back in the day, you know, bouncing into a stretch, that's really, really bad. You know, don't mm-hmm. overstretch, and don't overextend your joints. So just listen to your body.
I think so too. And I would also add for and this is a great question, because it's a good topic, and we could do a whole show on probably stretching. One of the hardest things for people to do with stretching is to get started with it. So if you've mm-hmm. gone years and haven't stretched, and then you go to stretch and you go, oh my God, this is kind of painful. That's a turnoff. That's a turnoff for people, and then they won't keep doing it. So, my advice for that is to start slowly. I mean, don't try to get into some crazy yoga pose or something like that right away. Start slowly, and I Beth kind of hit all the key points there. But stretching is, I try to stretch every day at least for a few minutes because you just feel better. And I mean, I'm not one of these crazy stretch people either, but you feel better,
absolutely.
I think your muscles will thank you for it. Believe me, I need to stretch out my hamstrings like crazy with all the walking and moving around I do.
And you just had a really good point that's going to kind of segue into this. I mean, it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be, and you want it to have a little discomfort, but if it hurts, if you feel that kind of jabbing or nagging, stop. You know, always listen to your body. If you're stretching correctly, you're going to feel some tension on the muscles and maybe, again, a slight discomfort. But if you have any sharp or serious pain during stretching or exercise, stop, because that's, you know, you can really harm your body that way. And remember, pain is your body's way of telling you that something isn't right. So if you have an injury, you know, ask your doctor, ask, you know, a certified personal trainer about exercise and stretching and follow their advice.
Well, that was a good first segment. That half hour flew by. Okay.
Yes, it did.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, there'll be more Let's Talk Going Gym Free. I'm Mark in San Diego. Beth is in Texas. And we will be right back after this break. Stay with us, everybody.
1 in 6 seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life, and an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels, and so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up2magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
And we are back. Wow, that was a fun, fast 30 minutes, the first 30 minutes of the show, as Beth and I were talking about three good foods for you, and three bad foods and all that. I was getting kind of hungry just going over that, Beth. That was a lot of fun. So if you're just joining us, it was fun. If you're just joining us, you're listening to UpToMeRadio.com. Of course, keep listening every week. You can also follow us on all the social media outlets, especially Twitter and Facebook. Also want to let everybody know that there's a new Going Gym Free site that's in the works. We hope to have that up in the next few days or so, but you can check out some of the videos on our YouTube channel right now on the YouTube channel. And also you can send us an email if you have a question for us or our guest at goinggymfree@gmail.com. So speaking of guests, we're honored to have this one today, Jen Roberts, who's a health management consultant with Arthur J. Gallagher and Company out of Houston. Jen, how are you? Thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Great.
Can't complain. I'm in San Diego. The weather's beautiful year-round, so I'm spoiled.
Yeah.
Hey, Jen, tell us a little about what you do. Give us your background, and let's fire away, and let's just talk. What's going on?
Sure. I've been working in health and wellness for about 20 years, and when I started, I don't think the wellness term was really utilized as much as it is today, so I've really seen things grow in different directions. And right now I do health management consulting for Arthur J. Gallagher, which is an international company that partners with employers to help manage risk and grow their businesses. So specifically, I work in our HR benefits consulting division, which helps employers create benefits and compensation plans tailored for their company and culture. And I'll come in and help them with how do we design health and wellness programs to improve the employee health, their family members' health, and productivity, as well as reduce costs.
Wow, that's a lot. I'm really interested because I'm in the business too, but I wanted to know, as a healthcare consultant, what do you think is the most important component to building a corporate wellness program?
I think you have to have your foundation down. And I wrote about this for a book that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce put out last year in April called Winning with Wellness, that you guys could check out on their site. I think they have it on their Twitter page as well. And we talked about what are the 10 essential elements that you need to have a workplace wellness program. And I'll tell you, the number one thing that I see people missing is measurement. So if they're not measuring what's happening, they don't know if their program is effective, right? And how do you have an effective strategy if you're not even measuring? So it's that old adage, you can't manage what you don't measure. So that's where I see people missing the biggest hurdle there. And so spend a lot of time doing that kind of work.
Interesting stuff. We're talking with, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Jen Roberts, health management consultant with Arthur J. Gallagher and Company. Kind of on that note, Jen, I guess this is probably a question you get a lot. It's kind of a general one, but where are we when it comes to, when you see this with your own eyes, where are we when it comes to sustaining wellness programs? Are they going to keep flourishing? Where are we at with sustaining them?
I love that question because often we will run into people, and whether it be with an employer or in an individual, where they say, it just doesn't work. My wellness program just isn't working. Or I've been exercising, I've been trying to eat right, and I'm still not losing weight, right? So I think people individually and employers can be disheartened when that happens to them. So part of it is putting in the metrics so you're tracking. When you look at it on an individual level, people are twice as likely to lose weight and maintain their weight loss if they track, right? If they journal, if they log it, if they're sharing it with their peers. So I think we have a little bit of that health psychology working in both areas.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I know when I want to take off a few LBs, I need to write down, I need to check my calories, I need to make sure that I'm checking my steps and all that. So I agree 100%. But, you know, you kind of touched on this a little bit in that last question, but what do you think are the biggest challenges, and maybe what's your biggest concern when it comes to population health?
Well, I would like to say that the biggest success that keeps me going is the lack of a smoking epidemic that we have in the United States now. When I first started working in this field, I was barely 20 years old, and there was a lot of federal funding for smoking cessation. So that's actually how I got my start. After I graduated from college, I started working on a couple of large National Institute of Health projects, helping people exercise, reduce their salt in their diet related to hypertension, and to quit smoking. So sounds pretty familiar for everyday wellness programs right now. And we actually showed that using a variety of techniques, which included in-person counseling as well as educational materials. They were actually called VHS tapes at that time because there was no internet to speak of to share clips or YouTube or Twitter or anything like that. But basically in a multimedia format that you really could help people at the highest risk. And we saw that with smoking, but you look, you know, now, and it's just not even the problem that it was. When we look in other countries, perhaps in China or in Southeast Asia, they have smoking rates similar to what ours were in the latter part of the last century. So you can see that you can make a change. And I'm really hopeful that we're going to see that in obesity for children in the next, say, 5 to 10 years. And I was lucky enough to get to work a little bit with, not directly, but with Michelle Obama's program, her Let's Move program. And mm-hmm. they gave us an opportunity to showcase some of the work that we were doing. And you all may have heard of NFL Play 60, which apparently was a better
sure.
program than mine. But so they got selected. But no, a great, great program. We actually did a program like that, but with the NBA for children in schools to reduce metabolic syndrome risk factors. So it was very successful. But again, you can't get people to think that you can do something like that unless you show them results. So first we had to develop the results kind of in the lab, in the hospital, in a patient setting. Then we had to go get large funding, and then we were able to provide it at no cost to schools. So that's kind of how that works. And I think as more money goes into programs like that, we'll start to stem the tide on obesity. And if you can get your kids to graduate from high school without being overweight or obese at that time, you significantly reduce the risk of being an overweight or an obese adult.
You know, I heard this statistic that, and you help me here, Jen, but if the trend continues as it is right now with childhood obesity, that parents will outlive their kids. Have you heard that statement before?
I haven't heard it as a trend, but I can tell you from my days back in patient care, it's absolutely true. I mean, how can you have, 11- and 12-year-olds being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes?
Yeah.
Right.
How are they going to survive that long when normally you might get it at age 40? So let's say their child gets it, they're 11 or 12. Well, the parent might not even be 40 by that point. Maybe they wouldn't get it till they were 50 or 60. Let's say there's a hereditary component or just an aging component that's contributing to it, right? So I think a big part about that I'm really into is involving your whole family, whether that be your friends or your family or just your actual immediate family, in making overall healthy lifestyle changes, not a diet, not a one-time thing. We're going to sign up and go do this 5K, but we're actually changing the way we do things in terms of how sedentary we are with sitting, in terms of how much more we're moving as a family, and making the right choices while we're eating.
Yeah.
No, I think you're spot on, Jen. We've actually had some people on that have had success with tobacco cessation programs. And you mentioned something else in there, Jen, that was interesting, the Let's Move initiative. And if people are out there, they're a great follow on Twitter. Actually, they're doing a lot of good things.
Mm-hmm.
I've sent messages to them back and forth. It's interesting. And you talk about, Beth brought up childhood obesity. One of the things when I do seminars, and a lot of what I do is with the elderly, although they don't like being called that now. They're advanced in age or seniors, so we won't use the other word. But they'll tell me the same thing, that they're concerned that their kids, who are kind of in my demo, mid-40s, and their grandchildren are heavy and not exercising, and they're worried about the next couple of generations coming up with obesity and diabetes. So it's a rough road, I think, for a lot of people. But I wanted to ask you about your own routine. What do you do, exercise, nutrition, wellness? How are you winning with wellness personally?
Well, I have to say I'm an exercise physiologist by training, so my plan is probably a little complicated for most people to kind of adapt, but I really do focus on what I was saying, is just how can I move more with my family? I have three little kids. This isn't very interesting or sexy, but it's actually doing chores and home improvements. I try to set aside time Saturday and Sunday where we've got a project, or we just finished building a chicken coop. So we did that over all spring break, and then the weekend before and after, it was kind of an odyssey. But we were able to get that done. And it's just, you're constantly moving around. You're carrying stuff. A few weeks prior, we did a landscaping project. I actually felt bad because I think we carried about 1,000 little rocks from our front yard to our backyard. So I had three little kids with me carrying all the rocks with wheelbarrows and little baby stroller and, but just stuff so it doesn't feel like they're exercising. And then my older two are in sports, which is a new thing for me because they're 9 and 11. So I'm just now letting them start to do organized sports. That could sound weird. But I ran track most of my, since I was 8, on a competitive circuit with USA Track and Field and was a scholarship athlete at University of Houston. And it just was extremely damaging to my body. And I've had, three foot surgeries, and I had finger surgery playing football and different things like that. So I was actually eased them into it more when a lot of my friends were having their kids, like, they're 4, they need to sign up for T-ball immediately, and then soccer, and then basketball. And I just kind of took it easy and just played games with my kids and did stuff with them just that I know from my own coaching of teams and coaching in schools. So it's kind of a sneaky way to get them to just move more. and kind of put some limits on the screen time. It's actually really easy. If you turn off all screens, the kids figure out stuff to get them moving around. But on the nutrition side, so I've actually made a huge change. We recently moved out of the city to a rural area outside of Houston, and we're building a sustainable farm. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but it is, we've got enough, we have a plan that eventually we'll grow enough food for our entire family. I don't expect that we're going to do that, by the way, but just planning it out and making sure you have the different types of things that you need for the year and getting the whole family involved on like canning, and we'll make, you know, 20 gallons of spaghetti sauce at one time and the tomatoes we grow and the basil in our garden and then can it for the year and different things like that. So it kind of is physical activity, but eating more whole food and less processed food, obviously. And I now no longer have to buy eggs thanks to my chicken coop. So just kind of some things like that, but it's really more about thoughtful eating, you know, teaching them how to think about that. Don't eat that Lunchable that your friend had. Don't trade what I gave you for that Lunchable because it's not good for you. You're still going to be hungry. So it's just kind of, you know, really more about our lifestyle is different, and it saves us from having to deal with some of the problems that you have if you kind of sit around all the time, eat, drink, and be merry, but not move and not watch what's going in.
I need to come out to your place and take a little field trip. That sounds fast.
I was just thinking that. I think that you ought to take this California boy, get me out of this area, and I want to come out and work the tractor, and I want to build a chicken coop too. Can I come out there, like farming fantasy camp for me? I think that
you can only come if you promise to pick wine grapes and blackberries.
Okay.
Because it is very difficult. I call them negative calorie blackberries because the amount of time it takes to pull one little one off, you'd burn more calories than if you ate it.
Deal.
So that's my little joke for them.
No,
but,
deal. I'm in. I'll do it.
Yeah. We'll make some Texas wine.
Okay.
There you go. You know, another personal question. I'm going to brag on you a little bit. You're an author, so can you tell us in the audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's just something that, you know, my background being in education and, you know, spending so much time coaching and teaching, and I taught at the University of Houston as well, it's just sort of what you do to kind of share that information. And I wrote an undergraduate thesis on the overtraining of youth in sport. So that was kind of my first big thing. And it's only published at the university, but, you know, it was sort of my experience as an athlete and really how to help parents pick the right sports for their kids. Now, mind you, I'm 20 years old at the time, or 21 years old. I didn't even have kids for many years. But from my own experience as a kid, I just knew that if you kind of turn the kids over directly to the coaches and don't really monitor, they're very likely to get injured and then re-injured and have overtraining injuries. We see this a lot in baseball because the kids start so early, they burn their arms out very, very quickly. Gymnastics is a very dangerous sport for females. If you look at NCAA injury rates and problems with fractures and compression, and then hockey is one of the worst, actually, for boys, related to multiple traumatic brain injuries. So they're not exactly what you'd expect. You know, football and this and that, but really it could actually be worse playing hockey or doing gymnastics for injuries for your kids. So I think you have to be thoughtful about that. And I actually created a little website that went with it, which was super high-tech at that time, to add that as a piece to it. And then for my master's, I wrote a metabolic syndrome risk factors, reducing them in youth, which is what we're talking about doing the program in schools for kids. And I just thought, well, if I've written these two things, maybe I can write more. And I got, I don't know how, somebody had contacted me about this little group you might have heard of called Livestrong. And it had not started yet, and they needed to create about 40,000 pages of content to launch their website. So I actually started writing for them and wrote hundreds of articles. A couple of them are still up there. And if you want to know my most popular one, you guys are going to laugh. How to become a personal trainer on a cruise ship.
Oh, I like
really?
That.
Really. So the way that would work is they would do Google engine searches to see what people were searching for. And then they would, the editor would come back and say, I need, you know, 5 tips on staying healthy on going on vacation, or I
yeah.
need 3 different ways to lose weight safely, or I need 5 things you can do today to help with your diabetes. So those were the kind of meta search terms that were coming through. Then the editor would write the titles and then dole out the assignments to an army of people. So I was really proud when the site got launched, and I was really sad when
yeah.
it kind of got some negative press. But they, you know, my role was fulfilled, which was kind of building up their initial content, and I still get small residual checks from that article because people are still reading it online, about $20 a year. So,
oh, there you go.
That probably means 5,000 people had to read it for $20 a year in revenue share. But you know, hey, that's the lasting legacy.
That's funny.
Absolutely.
I'm proud of you. Yeah, that's cool. We're talking with Jen Roberts, health management consultant, Arthur J. Gallagher and company. Jen, we're going to need to get a signed copy of your book, by the way, just FYI.
Of course.
Hey, I want to ask this question because I love asking this question for people that are healthcare professionals. I always love their input on this one. And a couple more questions before we let you go. We talked briefly earlier about, you know, childhood diabetes, obesity, all of those things. And we see, you know, Beth kind of pointed out how these numbers just kind of keep growing and they're trending in the wrong direction and all that. So if you were to look down the road, I love asking this question, in 10 years, if you get the crystal ball out, are you optimistic? Are people like you and Beth and me that are out there fighting the good fight, telling people to walk and drink water and not sit as much and do the simple things? Is it working, or can we see some of those numbers at least stopped in 10 years or coming down a little bit? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think it'll be really driven by policy. Just like smoking cessation was, it was driven by cities doing smoking bans within 25 feet of a window. It was driven by schools having no smoking policies, drug-free school zones that included cigarettes. It was driven by allowing there to be some resources for employers who don't want to hire smokers or want to charge them more than the person next to them who doesn't smoke. So I think policy is really the big thing that helped move it over the hill. We knew what we needed to do. American Cancer Society and Quitline, they had great resources and tools, but until you had fixed the policy and the structure. I think with obesity in schools, in Texas in particular, they significantly reduced the amount of required PE time for a good 12-year period. To accommodate for standardized testing. Then when people had kind of sounded the alarm on that, they said, okay, we'll adjust that. And I can give you an example. My little nephews were in school together, and they got to go to gym once every 10 days because
that blows me away.
They counted structured recess, I'm doing air quotes since we're on the radio, structured recess as their PE for the day, which means go sit on the playground while the teachers talk to each other and you guys play Pokemon cards or braid each other's hair, whatever it is little kids do in elementary school. They're certainly not running a mile. They're certainly not learning a skill in physical activity to give them like a lifetime love of sport. So I see there's kind of been a backlash with the obesity rates in Texas being so high, and so the schools felt a lot of pressure, and so they started adding more PE back into their programming. So I think it's a policy change. Now, let's look at what's going on right now with the Affordable Care Act, with where we're going with employer health insurance and everything like that. The employers are mandated to provide a certain amount of, you know, minimum insurance benefits, if they're going to call it an insurance plan. And now that employers understand that they can impact that, they can help their employees get better. Just like a school can help their students get better. They're there all day. It's very easy for them to have healthy food choices and to allow them and encourage them to move more. So when you're kind of locked in a setting like you're in a workplace, or just like when you're a student in school and you're kind of trapped in there for, you know, 6, 8, 9 hours, however long it has to be, if that environment isn't conducive to health, then you're in trouble. So I love working with employers right now and helping them come up with innovative ways that fit their culture, tailored to their population, to see those changes in their employees. And for the most part, employers just want to do it because they want healthy, happy employees. I think we all get, if you feel terrible and you come to work, you're probably not going to do the greatest job. But it's actually more about them being healthy and being engaged as opposed to saving costs. So if you can save costs, then that's great as well. But that's really encouraging to see the employers making such significant investments in their health and wellness programming.
I love it. I love it. Oh, my gosh. I love your enthusiasm. I love your energy. And I just wish I could bottle it up. But my last question for you, because our audience hears from Mark and from me every single week, and we give tips. So are there any tips that you would be willing to give to our audience? Just a few, 3 or 4 tips that you would give to them that maybe are just starting off, or they've been an athlete and they've been, you know, sitting as a new smoking. We've all heard that. So any tips you can give our audience?
Yeah, I really like, and Mark and I had talked about this a little bit, I really like finding physical activity in your daily life, because that's going to be the most sustainable and can stay with you for a lifetime. So I don't run track anymore because my knees and my ankle can't do it. I don't play football anymore because it's a little brutal, to be honest, but I picked up golf. And I have to say I was horrible at it, and I'm probably okay-ish sort of at it right now, but I know it's something that I can do my whole life, and it is competitive, and my whole family can do it. So I would just encourage you guys to find just something within your lifestyle that you can hold on to and make a change in terms of exercise, you know, whether it be gardening more, standing, you know, while you're on the phone or something like that, just like those little things, parking a little further away. I'm really big in doing core isometric exercises in the car because I drive a lot. So if you guys have ever done that before.
I have.
Yeah, it's very good for posture and core strength. So I'll do some things like that, you know, taking stairs. I know you all have heard this before, but those are the ones that are easy to fold into your life. And in nutrition, I just try to think twice about what kind of things could be in there, not for weight loss, not because I'm trying to stick to this is the calories or my fat or my protein, more about where did this come from and do I want that in my body. And when you start looking at stuff like that, even, you know, let's say it's 100% juice from, you know, a famous juice maker, you think, but yeah, what else is in that? So reading the labels, mm-hmm. if you don't, but not so much on calculating every way to Sunday, but really just understanding what you're putting in your body, especially processed sugar and then substitute sugars as well, are really scary to me personally.
Mm-hmm,
so making those choices. And one kind of random weird tip I have is avoiding foods that are white. You guys might have heard of that before, but if you can get white asparagus, that one could be off the list. That one you don't have to include. But if you think about it, you know, sugar, bread, mayonnaise, cream sauce, dressings, all of those things, you know, cheese sauces and things like that can be white. And so it's almost like if I see white, I think twice, if that makes
right.
sense on the food that I'm
going
to
eat. Yeah, absolutely. I like that tip.
Yeah,
what I use with the little kiddos in the school program, which is really good, and you all may have heard of it, it's called Slow Go and Go Foods. So each food is classified as a red, yellow, or green light. So, you know, it would be okay to eat a baked potato, but it would be not okay to eat French fries. So you would kind of have them classify, is this a slow go or a well food? And it can be the same food, you know, fresh, sauteed with some butter and maybe some fat or cheese on it, or then like deep fried, right? And then so you can understand how you can still eat the food you like, but eat it in a healthier way. Or if these are your three options, are they slow, go, and woe, and try to pick as many that you can that are go.
Wow, that's good stuff.
That's,
I like
no,
that.
No, that's Jenna, I wish we had more time, but I do want to say I wanted to thank you for coming on, and I also want to say that save me a spot on the farm too, because I'll come out.
Got it.
I'm gonna do blackberry picking. I want to drive the tractor, and I want to hang with the chickens. So
fantastic! You're all welcome.
We don't do anything like that in this part of California. So yeah, I'm gonna come out. We should do that. Beth and I will come over and.
That'll be fun.
Well, Beth is from Indiana, so she would know how to work the farm probably better than I would. But she's probably got a little more farm experience. But
I grew up in Detroit, so if I can work my way through it, I'm sure anybody can.
Right, there's not a lot of farming in Detroit, right?
No, there could be one day. There could be.
That's good stuff. Well, Jen, I know you're busy. Thanks for taking the time, and we really appreciate it. I hope you have a great rest of your night, and thanks again for the time. Come on anytime, okay?
Great. Thanks. Be well, everybody.
Okay. Thank you. That was Jen Roberts, health management consultant at Arthur J. Gallagher & Company. Beth, I like her energy. And I like
what she
has to say. And that's it. You know, I love talking to people like that because – not only were they a former athlete, but now they kind of get it for kind of the everyday functional wellness and fitness. Because, you know, she's got three kids, and she's obviously not a track star anymore. But she still has to find ways. I'm sure she could. But she still has to find ways to stay healthy. And she had really good insight, good tips.
Absolutely.
And, you know, she's good. Good straight shooter. We love that. So yeah, that was great. I'm glad we were able to have her on as a guest. We are out of time, Beth. I'll see you. We'll talk next week when we come back with another edition of the show. Until then, everybody take care of yourself, take care of each other, and we will see you back here next time. Have a good week, everybody.